And good morning again. It's 9:05. I'm Matt Crow filling in for Chad Hasty. And as promised, we've got Senator Glenn Hager calling in. We're going to take your calls 1-800-687-0790. That's 800-687-0790. Or you can call in on 770-5790. Senator Hager, good morning.
It's great to be with you.
I appreciate it. You know, I was reading through your biography a few days ago, and I see you're the youngest member of the legislature. Is that still true? I mean, has that changed? Nothing.
It is by age, but it's surely after the last few months, it doesn't feel that way anymore.
You know, I was going to ask you about that. Did you have any conception when you got involved writing this legislation, HB2, what was going to come of it? I mean, it's been a national story. It's been an international story.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how so many things in life, you think you have an idea of what you're getting yourself into, yet once you're in the middle of it, hindsight is obviously 20/20, and looking out into the future is not. But no, I did not realize that we would be in the middle of a special session number one with a filibuster at the very end, special session number two, passage of the legislation. And it still amazes me when you compare what we did to the laws in many of the other 50 states in the nation, or even across overseas in Western European countries, which are perceived as very liberal social countries. Our standards in Texas, amazingly, being such a conservative state, were much more lax than other states. It's amazing that it's continued to got that much attention, is my point.
It's fascinating, too, because I think we've seen it in the last couple of days. The White House has once again taken on the state of Texas, this time over voting rights. Do you ever get the impression, Senator, that the White House is looking over our shoulders down here, both at the legislature and at the voters?
Oh, I firmly believe that in the White House and in the administration, Texas has a big X on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like we always have an X right across our back, and everything that we try to do, they want to undermine it at every single step of the way, which is unbelievable that one administration would say, I have it out for Texas.
Well, you know, I think they're envious, if not anything else. You know, now in writing this legislation, HB2, talk a little bit about, I know you're a lawyer, and I know these bills are written by lawyers, and they have a lot of legalese in them. And when I was in Washington, I mean, the bills that the members would vote on are very technical and take months and sometimes years to write. Tell me, but just kind of simplify it for me. What was your basic goal in the legislation?
Well, the basic goal, first and foremost, was to move the point of a legal abortion mm-hmm. from 6 months to 5 months, because number one, a child at that point, because of scientific evidence, can feel pain. Mm-hmm. So that child can feel pain, which is a completely separate legal argument from whether that child was viable outside of the womb. So it's a different legal argument. You look at the states that have passed it, those that have based their argument on fetal pain, they have not really been challenged in the legal courts. So that's number one. And then number two, the other three pieces of the legislation, we're really trying to improve women's health care here in the state of Texas, especially when it comes to abortion clinics.
What was your reaction, Senator, when you had those thousands of protesters there in the courtyard and outside the Capitol? From a political perspective, you have to, rock and roll and let it roll off your back. But from a personal perspective, what did you think of the motivations behind those people?
Well, I feel like some of the people, and it was interesting, especially the second go-round and the second special session with the committee testimony that we had. It was very orderly. It was very balanced with both sides. It's a very emotional issue. It's very sensitive, and it should be. But with that being said, there are wide age groups of people who were there. However, a lot of the, for lack of better words, the mob atmosphere, I guess, mm-hmm. for lack mm-hmm. of better words, really seemed to come from more or less a younger generation, mm-hmm. a college generation, same as if somebody wanted to disrupt a committee testimony, it tended to seem as though someone had their mindset that they wanted to be able to get that media attention, where people who were a little bit older decided, well, we're going to say what we think, which people should. That's our constitutional rights, freedom of speech, but we're not going to try to disrupt the proceedings.
Now, this the bill does permit a woman to have an abortion up to her fifth month of pregnancy.
Correct.
It allows an abortion when the mother's life is at risk or substantial
Absolutely.
Physical impairment might be possible. You know, doesn't common sense dictate that this is a reasonable law? And I mean, at the end of the day, when you're at your kitchen table talking about this with your wife, I mean, do you have a hard time seeing other people's viewpoints on this? Do you try to put yourself in the other person's shoes, you know, the protesters, the demonstrators, the opposition, to try and see what their feelings are? I mean, how much time do you spend doing that? I mean,
I can tell you, one of the things that was said at the very end of the debate, the second go around when we passed House Bill 2, is there was a kind of a reference that as though this was just half-heartedly done, that mm-hmm. you're not thinking of others. And I can tell you, and I said this when we had the bill signing ceremony, I said the same thing when we concluded the debate at the end of House Bill 2 in the final passage, that this has weighed heavy on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It has weighed heavy on my heart and literally my soul for months. It's not been a couple of days. Yeah. It's not been a couple of weeks or a couple of months. When I started drafting this legislation at the end of last year, the middle end of last year, I talked to my wife, I've talked to my staff, I've talked to numerous women about this legislation because I wanted to understand what other people thought. I represent a large district in the state of Texas. I represent the people of the state of Texas, and I think I should try to understand their vantage point. But I will say this, some of the testimony that came before us, I still just cannot understand the mindset. There are certain people, and one testimony just sticks out in my mind over and over again, and I don't know if I can ever begin to understand why it should be legal after 5 months. It just doesn't make sense.
We're talking to Senator Glenn Hager. He's a legislator from District 18 here in Texas. We'll take your calls at 800-687-0790. Well, Senator, as if you didn't have a full enough plate, you've also thrown your hat in the ring for comptroller for the state of Texas. I have a fairly good sense of what a comptroller does for a state, but in a state as large as Texas, give us the Reader's Digest version of what your duties would be if you're elected.
Absolutely. The very short version of it is the comptroller obviously is the tax collector for the state of Texas, for the people of the state of Texas. You are their tax collector.
Do you really want that job?
Well, I know. That's one hat that I've never thought I would really want in my life. I've usually typically not like tax collectors in any shape, form, or fashion, and cringe when that time of the year comes up. But one, you're that job. Number two, you are the revenue estimator. At the beginning of a legislative session, you tell the legislators, this is how much money we have in our piggy bank and how much money we are going to have in our piggy bank. And it's your job also as the chief financial officer to really be the voice for the state of Texas to make sure that people know that we are open to do business. And as a small business person, which I grew up in, and my family have had small businesses, you know, whether you're a large business or a small, the fact is small businesses are the heart and soul of this state and this country. And you want to make sure that you have a strong, stable voice that is a calming hand and make sure that businesses understand we're here, we want you to be here, and we want to continue to expand the Texas economy.
Now, who else has thrown their hat in the ring for the comptroller's office?
Good question. As of right now, myself, there's one of my constituents, actually a very good friend of mine, somebody who's been a good friend of mine for several years, Deborah Medina, who ran for governor when Rick, mm-hmm. Governor Perry and mm-hmm. Kay Bailey Hutchinson. So Deborah, who I've represented her for 12 years now, has said she wants to run for comptroller. And then also there was a state representative who served one term out of Corpus Christi, Raul Torres, who has said he is going to run. There's a couple other people that are talking about it, but I'm not really sure if at the end of the day they're going to make the race or not.
We've got a caller on the line for you, Senator.
Yes, sir.
His name is Kevin Bryce. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, Senator. How are y'all?
I'm good. How are you, Kevin?
Hey, doing great. No, I just had a question going back to that House bill and everything. You know, it's just the concerns is what will happen for access to clinics with people that really kind of need it, and how did you guys determine that the 20 weeks was the set date for that? And I'll go ahead and hang up and listen and just kind of wanted to hear your response.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic question. I'm
glad you called in and asked that question this morning. Number one, you know, I've said over and over in the debate, and obviously everybody wasn't there during the debate, but one discussion has been that are we going to eliminate and close all of the clinics in the state of Texas, which those clinics do not just perform abortion, but they provide very critical other types of access for women here in the state of Texas. Number one, those clinics can come up to what's called ambulatory surgical center standards, which other states, such as Pennsylvania, has passed this law. And those clinics have come up to that higher standard, which it is a much safer standard of an environment for women, for individuals that come for those health care services. And say, for example, in Pennsylvania, all the clinics did not close. Number two is if a clinic, for some reason, because of the cost or whatever reason, cannot come up to that standard, then what they can do is continue, obviously, to perform, to have all the other services, whether they decide just not to perform abortions anymore.
Well, thank you, Senator, for that explanation, Kevin. I hope that that answers your question. You know, Senator, who were your biggest allies in getting this bill pushed through? I mean, I read about several in the newspaper, but who was down there in the trenches with you on a day in, day out basis?
Well, obviously, there's a lot of my colleagues who were extremely supportive. So many of my colleagues were such a big help, and this was really something of this magnitude is not about one person or just a couple of people. So there was a lot of our colleagues and legislators that helped me through this process. Obviously, there were a lot of different associations and groups that also have a belief in the pro-life efforts and movements and women's health care. I mean, it's just amazing the number of people that have reached out to me during this process and even afterwards. I mean, the list just literally, it is almost like a movie where you see Santa Claus pulls out the wish list and it just rolls for miles and miles around. And my point being is that's how many people I would have to add to it that were very supportive through this whole process.
We've got one of the rising stars in Texas politics on the radio with us this morning. It's 9:18 here on the Chad Hastie Show. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, hopefully the center will be able to stay with us for a few more minutes. Hey, good morning. It's 9:22. I'm Matt Crow here on the Chad Hastie Show. I've got Senator Glenn Hager from District 18. And not only has the senator had his hands full with the passage of HB 2, he's also thrown his hat in the ring for the state comptroller's office. And you know, I'm curious, Senator, when you run for state comptroller, do you do that with a traditional campaign, media, personal stops, that type of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. You get out, number one, and try to meet and talk to as many people as you can. But, of course, with the state of Texas of 26 million people, that's pretty hard and vast, as large as the state of Texas is. So, therefore, it's not just from a grassroots perspective, but it's also from kind of the more mass media perspective. And two, incorporating here in the 21st century much more of the social media, which has caught on and taken a place of other types of media here in the state of Texas and across the world.
You know, while we're talking to you, let me give the number out again, 800-687-0790, if you want to talk to the senator. You mentioned growing up, your family was in small business. I know you're over from Katy. Tell me a little bit about yourself. I know you went to A&M, and also you're a Razorback. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, when I finished A&M, then I decided to go to law school, and through that law school, my last destination was up in Fayetteville, Arkansas, which I never envisioned myself going to school there, but it's a beautiful place, and it was a very nice campus, and I enjoyed it for that one last year of school. After finishing school, then moved to Katy, because that's where my wife's family's from, and just 24 or 25 miles north of where we live in Katy is our family farm, and my family, we've been over in that Hockley area, which is not the county, but the town.
Right.
We've been there since 1846.
Holy smokes.
And my dad, my cousin, and I still farm together. My cousin and I were six generations on that family farm. My family not only has a farm here, but we also have a grain elevator. We used to be in the equipment dealership business. So part of my life has been brought up, obviously, in the agriculture-type businesses, but it's multifaceted, whether it's as small as just, you and yourself and your family members with a couple of employees, or even having multiple employees and people traveling around. So it's been a very interesting background from a business perspective for myself, which has helped me immensely, in my opinion, as a legislator in the House of Representatives or in the State Senate, and then now hopefully in the Comptroller's office in a couple years.
You know, I think that speaks very well of your candidacy, that you bring that perspective. I was saying a little earlier in the show before you joined us, there aren't that many, I mean, from a percentage standpoint, there aren't that many politicians who have run their own business, who have created a business, who have met a payroll, who know what it's like to pay the taxes and get the permits and get, you know, pay the fees and so forth and the licenses, to have, you know, to hire people, to have to let people go. You're on several committees there in the legislature, not the least of which is Senate Finance, which crafts the state budget. Talk a little bit about what state is Texas's budget in right now. How are we doing from a fiduciary standpoint?
Texas is very healthy. This last legislative session, I was proud to be part of the effort to give small businesses and all businesses here a tax cut. So an across-the-broad tax cut, which is important. It may only be 2.5% taxes in the first year for margins tax purposes and 5%. But, you know, I know from a small business, and even if you have a large business, your money is your money. So even if it's 2.5% or 5%, so we were able to do that. We were able to actually leave money in the bank. We didn't spend all the tax dollars. If you don't have to spend them, you shouldn't spend them. You leave some in the savings account. We left money in the rainy day fund. And Texas economic forecast is very good. You know, we went in a downturn like the rest of the nation and the world here a couple of years ago. But Texas is very healthy. We're very blessed to live in this state. I tell people every single day, you know, I wake up and I'm blessed to be able to call Texas home.
We're talking to Senator Glenn Hager, one of the sponsors and one of the authors, really, of HB2, which will place new laws and create new laws and helpful laws, I think I should say, on abortion here in Texas. 800-687-0790. You know, Senator, talking about the economy in Texas, which is, I think, one of the reasons, I think you probably agree with this, that so many people are moving to Texas on a daily basis. I don't know exactly what the number is, day to day, but it seems like, you know, and speaking from experience, you know, there are job opportunities down here and people move from all over the country. Does it ever concern you or any of your colleagues in the legislature that the people moving down here may not understand why there's jobs available here to begin with?
Well, I think what you said I was thinking of before you even asked that question. That, you know, one, I'll say this, the number of people that move to Texas is roughly anywhere from a 1,000 to 1,400 people a day.
Wow.
365 days a year on average, if you average it out. So if you take the town of Katy, which the actual city limits that I live in, which is a large town of 14,000 people, then you can imagine that town is built anywhere from in 10 to 14 days. I mean, that is just, it's hard to imagine. Small communities in my district I drive through and the population of is 900, 1,200. You know, I have tons of small, I've got school districts that the whole population of the school district moved in one day. So it's a lot of people and a lot of infrastructure, but it does concern me to some degree that as people are moving from, let's say, the East Coast or the West Coast, not to pick on them, but just to
right.
make a point, it is a different fundamental mindset.
All right, we got to run from that. We'll come right back to Senator Glenn Hager. Nine 36 here at News Talk 790 KFYO. I'm Matt Crow, guest hosting this morning for Chad Hastie, who's out on vacation. I've got on the phone Senator Glenn Hager, probably one of the main architects of the most recent abortion law here in the state of Texas, and a law that I can't think of one person I haven't talked to in the last 3 weeks, Senator, who didn't have an opinion on what was going on down in Austin with the demonstrators and Wendy Davis. I need to ask you this, and I know, you know, you've got to work with Davis and you've got to get along with her and so on and so forth. And I'm sure it's, you know, nothing personal, but, you know, what's your relationship with her? And, just curious because her national image has skyrocketed in the last couple of weeks. And I just wanted to kind of get your opinion of her as a legislature and how you work with her.
You know, that's a good question. You know, serving in the House of Representatives at one time and now been serving in the Senate for a little while, in the Senate with 31 of us, it's amazing how we all may completely disagree on one issue, depending on the side that you're on. And this one was very emotional, very, very entrenched. Either you're on one side or another, per se. There's not a whole lot of middle ground, I guess, for lack of better words. But if it's the next issue, we have to work together. Right now, we're trying to work on transportation. And so most of us, we all agree we need to have more money for transportation. So it is amazing how, at least because of the Senate, 31 of us, we can disagree, but you try to put those personal differences on issues and make sure it's not personal attacks on an individual, but it's really about the debate and not about individual personalities.
Well, I think it speaks to your character that you're able to get along with everybody at the state capitol. I know that sometimes probably isn't easy to do.
I was going to interrupt and say, I didn't say it was always easy. It's just something that you have to do to try to represent your constituents.
Well, and you know, the people who voted you in the office, I'm sure they're grateful for that. And you know, speaking to somebody who's in the legislature that's got a level head, that's got the best interests of the people in front of them, you know, it's refreshing. You know, oftentimes up in Washington, you'd walk through the Capitol up there on the hill, and you know, you'd have members who'd sit next to each other on the subway going over to vote, or in committee meetings. They'd never say anything to each other. They turn their backs on each other, and it's kind of sad. I think it gives people, particularly you know, when people see that going on with their elected officials, it's very disappointing. What made you decide to run for comptroller? I'm curious. And also, I just, you know, I can't resist asking you this. I don't mean to infer anything by this, but haven't you got enough on your plate right now? I mean, as a state legislator, going for statewide office, that's a huge step for you.
It's a significant undertaking. I will say that, and one that will take a tremendous amount of my time. I do have a very full plate with a obviously personal family business with a wife, three young children, which my family comes first and foremost. But then my wife and I have found a way, and my family who I work with have found a way for me to balance my legislative duties, because I took an oath in office to serve my constituents. But looking at the state comptroller's office, it is one office that is absolutely critical to the state of Texas. And I think that person who's in that office is more than just performing the functions of that office, but it's someone who is the face and the voice of Texas, as when it comes to how we present ourselves as in for open for business. And as someone who grew up knowing what it's like to do the lowliest jobs to the highest jobs and still willing to do the smallest jobs, because as an owner, if you're not willing to do those, you can't ask others to do them for you. And so my personal background, I think, suits me for that job. And then also transitioning from the state senate to the comptroller's position, you have to have people who are willing to serve. And I've enjoyed the job I have, but it just feels like the right timing that I should run for this other office.
Well, you would certainly go out on a high note with your legislative career. People want to learn more about you and about, you know, who you are and what you've done in the legislature, what your policies would be as comptroller. Where's the best place to get that information?
The best place to go is just www.glennhager.com.
Okay, and that'll tell everybody.
Absolutely, I'm having all my different policies, views, opinions, how to contact me, for me to respond back there on Facebook. Obviously, we're much more active now on Twitter than ever before, because from a statewide perspective, it's important to have those social media. So I'm gearing all of those up right now so people can reach out and contact me who have not been able to know about me before.
Just got a few minutes left. I want to ping you a little bit on national politics. Governor Perry's announced that he won't be seeking another term. General Abbott has tossed his hat in the ring for the Republican nomination. Just talking about the governor's race for a minute, I know Tom Pawkin has also declared his candidacy. At this point in time, with Governor Perry leaving office, and I don't want to put you in the hot seat, do you think it's beneficial that a person, a man or woman, can stay in the governor's office as long as Governor Perry did? I'm not saying it wasn't the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, but just from a perspective of the amount of time one person spends running an organization, any organization for that matter, what are your thoughts on that?
That is an excellent question, and it's one that I actually think about quite often, not just for governor, mm-hmm. but even myself, that I've served in the legislature at the conclusion of this next 2 years will be 12 years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have to start asking yourself, is that really too much? Mm-hmm. Is it time for someone new? Is it more or less? But I think what the important question is, you have to look at the person and the job.
Yeah.
And I do believe that serving 12, 14, 16 years in an executive branch is really enough. I think it's time for someone new. That's just my personal opinion. But I'll also say part of the question is if we do not accomplish and finish this transportation funding, which is part of this special session right now, the question is, will the governor call us back in?
Yeah, now that bill, right, not to interrupt you, but that bill right now was in conference between the House and the Senate.
The House and the Senate, we're trying to negotiate the very last part of it, the little bit of differences. And yesterday, some people said, well, do you think the governor will call us back?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, the one good thing of having Governor Perry this long, we know he's serious. If he says he's going to call us back, he doesn't blink. He does it. So the point being is it puts pressure on legislators to try to finish their work. So there is a benefit from that standpoint. But on other times, it's time for a fresh face and new ideas. And I think you must have a healthy balance between the two. But I don't think there's one right or wrong. It depends on the individual is my point.
Well, I agree with you, and I think most of our listeners would too. But it's important, I think, for when a politician, an elected official, realizes that it's time to move on. And I think you certainly have a wonderful attitude and a wonderful background. I wanted to ask you just one more question about the transportation bill. The rainy day fund, explain real quick. We're going to tap into that. We're not going to tap into that. We need to mandate how much we leave in the balance of the rainy day fund.
Absolutely. Very, very good question. You know, the rainy day fund, which is our savings account, the mm-hmm. taxpayer saving days account, was put into place back in the 1980s when the last oil bust occurred.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody said, wow, we need a little bit of a savings account. The interesting thing is no one ever envisioned it would have this much money in it.
Yeah.
And no one would have envisioned the shell plays that are going on in the state of Texas or how healthy that economic activity is, because the money goes into the rainy day fund based on the health of oil and gas activities in the state of Texas, taxes that come off of those. And the one interesting thing for the rainy day fund is envision a cup. And if you set that cup in a bowl, you say, well, why would I do that? Well, you pour water into the cup, and at some point, the cup fills up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the mechanism for the rainy day fund works. At some point, roughly around $12 billion, that fund cuts off. And then the water will go into the bowl. You say, well, what is the bowl? Mm-hmm. That's general revenue. And so, therefore, what can that be spent on? It can be spent on anything and everything.
Yeah.
So I've argued it's important to take some of that rainy day money and spend it on what is important for Texas for the long haul, which is infrastructure.
Well, Senator,
or road infrastructure.
Thank you for explaining that. And boy, what a great place to be and having a lot of money. But with that comes a huge responsibility. And I wanted to thank you for coming on the show this morning. I know you're a busy man. You're a family man, and sometimes and a businessman. And now you're running for comptroller. Wish you the best of luck. I hope you come to Lubbock to campaign, and if you do, please come to KFYO. We'd love to have you in the studio.
Certainly will. I appreciate you letting me be on this morning. Thanks for letting me be on.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Have a good day.
That was Senator Glenn Hager, state legislator and arguably a rising star in Texas, had a huge hand in the last abortion bill that just passed, Governor Perry signed.